Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Ryan, Homefield Apparel is here to support Gopher Gridiron Radio. As I was walking around the tailgates in Clemson, Ryan, I was wearing one of my Homefield Apparel t-shirts, a Gopher Homefield Apparel t-shirt, and I was able to be spotted as the one not wearing Clemson gear. And they said, hey, where did you get that sweet shirt? I said, hey, you can get this sweet shirt and vintage licensed apparel from many universities, including your own in Clemson. All you have to do is go to homefieldapparel.com.
I cannot stress to you, from walking around the different tailgating lots this year, the amount of Homefield Apparel I saw out there, whether it's the Spin Your Head t-shirt that recently came out, one that the Gopher players were even wearing. I saw that at the airport. There was a guy wearing it. You know, whether it's the sweatshirt from the Minnesota football box, they've got for these chillier games coming up, you got the bomber jacket, you got the coach's jacket. The amount of Homefield Apparel that you guys are finding that, yeah, it's cool, unique, and it fits well, and it feels good. There's a reason that we go with these guys, people. It's great quality stuff, very unique stuff that you're going to be excited to wear. So what we want you to do, go to homefieldapparel.com. Click on Minnesota, click on your favorite NCAA 25 team, whether that's, say, I don't know, Missouri Western. I can guarantee there's going to be some unique things for you to check out. And when you do get to check out, use promo code GG, the numbers 24, and you get 15% off your first order. That is promo code GG24 at checkout.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Feuer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to You All Doubted Narrative Street Edition. As I had copious amounts of fans telling me that Minnesota was going to win this game easily, we laid out the reasons why this thing could get emotional. And in yet another fourth quarter where it is a one-score game right within reach, the Gophers decide to have their worst quarter since probably Iowa in a 26-19 loss, one that leaves certainly a sour taste in everybody's mouth heading into the second bye week. And joining us, as always, my second cousin, Dinky Town Athlete's Own, and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, how tart is that taste in your mouth right now?
Yeah, it's this one's going to be interesting, guys. I mean, the rewatch uncovered a few interesting things that I know we'll get into schematically. Certainly the bounces in many cases didn't go their way, where I think in previous games, in many cases, it had. So a combination of factors, I think, led to where we ended up. But always excited to join you guys. Appreciate you having me back.
Well, fellas, I think we can chalk this one up to this is the Gophers' first dose of the parody. The parody bug, I'll call it. And holy cats, you see Kyle Manunga is out and you think, man, this is really setting up nicely for the Gophers. But the other reality is Rutgers wants to win too. They're playing at home. They're currently 4-4, 1-4 in conference as they come into this game, and they really want to get to a bye week. There are really lofty expectations for this team, and they're coming off that bye, and guess what? They found a way, 26-19 on the day. Not pretty in that fourth quarter. The Gophers have been notoriously feasting in the fourth quarter and just finding a way, and it finally came back to bite them. And the Gophers move to 6-4, 4-3 in conference. You know, there's a lot of ways we could take this. Maybe we'll talk about kind of the season perspective as we go into bye number two as we close out the episode. So I'll save those. But let's talk about when the Gophers were on offense, fellas. On the day, Max Brosmer was 27 of 45 for 262 yards and one touchdown. I think the one thing we have to be mindful of here just was the frustration that came with the rushing. Only 35 carries, only 1.8 yards. Rushing yards total was 19 yards total. That was incredibly frustrating. And then in the fourth quarter, you have the turnover and the safety, which ultimately do you in. Offense was a struggle bus, especially in that fourth quarter. But Derek, schematically, what were you seeing?
Well, I thought that a couple things Rutgers did that gave Minnesota some challenges. They ran a lot of man pressures. I felt like after the Maryland game that was going to be the last game that defensive coordinators would focus on stopping Minnesota's run, because Minnesota had such they were on such a heater passing the ball that I really thought it would flip-flop. And I think I had told Ryan in our post-production meeting that my expectation was that defenses would probably try two different methods, either running very heavy coverage, dropping 7 or 8 into coverage, or very heavy pressure. Nothing in between. Max has proven that if you run head up base coverage, he's good enough. He's smart enough. He can identify coverages well enough that that's just not going to get it done. And Daniel Jackson's done well enough. So what we saw in the Illinois game was they played all coverage. They didn't run pressures. They dropped 7 or 8. And in this game, it was the flip-flop. So Rutgers decided that they were going to be running almost exclusively man coverage. In the second half, they changed that up a little bit. But for the most part, they wanted to pressure Max. And I think that Minnesota's inability to be able to respond to that and have the receivers, things like shallow crosses, screens, other things that you normally run against man, just were not successful. They tried to run the ball quite a bit, and I could see, understand people at home saying, they haven't had much success. Why do they keep trying to run? Well, because they're running a lot of man coverage, and you can run off the secondary and you're trying to run into an even box, but that didn't work. So that's ultimately what I think Rutgers' approach was. The one thing I would add to that finally is Rutgers understood that Max Brosmer is not a running quarterback. So when you run man-to-man, you often spy the quarterback with an extra defender. They didn't do that the whole day. They never spied Max, which gives them an extra defender in pass coverage. Now, ironically, that was why Max actually had success early on in those couple scrambles, running the ball down the field. But had they had a more running quarterback, they probably could have taken Rutgers out of that coverage earlier, because you could have just scrambled the quarterback over and over. But that's not Max's game. They're not going to ask him to do that, and I don't blame them. So that's what Rutgers, I think, schematically did, and Minnesota just really had a challenge with it.
I'd say this. I do not understand the offensive line. And I'm going to essentially do a lot of, I think some people think I'm going to be pretty harsh on them on this episode, but I just don't understand why this offensive line continues to be what I would call the most inconsistent offensive line of the PJ Fleck era. You look at the 4-1 stretch that Minnesota was on. They ran it well against USC for the first time and since essentially the non-conference. And even in the non-conference, they didn't run it well. But then the next week against UCLA, they can't do anything on the ground. Coming off the bye week, you can't run it very well against Maryland, but then they run it well last week against Illinois, and then against Rutgers, they were just atrocious. We'll get to the fourth quarter specifically, in which I have some very pointed thoughts on the execution and performance of that unit, but I would also say Darius Taylor did not appear on the availability report. Maybe he was always going to play, but it was clear Darius Taylor was at about 60%. And Darius Taylor at 60% outside of one run that was incredibly, and I will give the offensive line their flowers here, very well blocked, especially on the right side of the offensive line there with Greg Johnson, Quinn Carroll. Philip Daniels and Nick Kallerup, but I can't believe that they gave Darius as many opportunities as they did, because he looked, I just didn't think he played particularly well. And I think a lot of that has to do with the bumps and bruises he was playing for, or playing through. I would say I would have given more opportunities to Marcus Major, but I think that's obviously a PJ Fleck type of decision. But I can't wrap my mind around some of the inconsistencies, because I don't understand why it continues to happen. Why is it last week against Illinois, you have one of your better performances of the season, but then the next week, the same five offensive linemen, you're very inconsistent. Rutgers is able to get pressure constantly from the first drive with four. And that was one of the biggest differences on the day, people. Minnesota couldn't get any pressure in the first half, which I certainly have some thoughts on that. But Rutgers from the opening drive was able to get pressure with four, and especially in that fourth quarter, there's not a lot you can do if you're Max Brosmer and Greg Harbaugh, in my opinion, when there is a shotgun snap. And I haven't seen this happen in a long time from a Minnesota offensive line, Luke. Max Brosmer, literally, figuratively, spiritually, and emotionally, takes the shotgun snap, turns his shoulders, and he is absolutely enveloped to the point where he fumbles the football because he's not expecting a 300-pound lineman to decapitate him within 1 second of the snap. There were just, I was very perplexed as to why they played the way they did. The only thing I can point to, Derek, is maybe they were worn down from last week against Illinois. That's a very physical team, but it's only their third game in a row. Yeah, I look at someone like Philip Daniels. He's very fresh and compared to a lot of these other guys on the offensive line, but they just got out physical, and that annoys me. So, Derek, how does it go from last week against Illinois, you match the physicality, and it's why Minnesota is able to win the football game down the stretch, to this week against Rutgers, where from essentially the opening drive, especially towards the latter stretches of that game, the execution wasn't there. I would say the physicality wasn't there consistently. What do you attribute what we saw from the offensive line to?
You know, I was going to mention before you did that out physical is what sticks with me. When Rutgers is playing, when any defensive line is playing in the backfield, run or pass, that's not a good situation to be in. And one of the things it comes to me, and I'm not trying to take any blame away from the offensive line. It wasn't a good game. Especially as the game went on, especially the fourth quarter. But to me, it looked as if Rutgers' defensive line was playing without any responsibility besides getting penetration. They weren't checking draw. They weren't checking screen. They weren't dropping anybody into coverage because of that man scheme behind them, and because of the fact that they didn't feel there would be a quarterback running threat. They just played. They shot out of a cannon and played into the backfield of Minnesota and out physical them, and that just gave them fits. And the inconsistency thing, Ryan, I don't have any words of wisdom. I don't have any magic remedies. It's been that way, just up and down. And the week to week thing, it doesn't make any sense to me either. So other than a couple schematic things that gave them an extra challenge from Rutgers, I'm struggling to find the answers too. And again, the disappointing thing was, and we haven't talked much about pass blocking yet, but the disappointing thing was, I do think Minnesota wore down on the offensive line as the game went on, because by the time the fourth quarter rolled around, it just snowballed on them. It got worse and worse.
Luke, what did you think?
Yeah. In general, you got to give Rutgers credit, especially on the defensive line. They were really good. And if you look at the breakdown in terms of attempts, the Gophers attempted 45 passes to 19 runs, right? So defensively, more often than not, you're going to be right by just guessing pass. And I'm not here to say I totally disagree with the approach. I didn't think the play calling was all that bad. I just thought the execution again was just poor. At the end of the day, you have to be able to execute. And then I think you also have to be able to recognize who's having a good day and who's having a bad day. Guys, I very early in that game, I think I had messaged in the group chat, maybe this is a day we see Jared Mangum I always
Baron Mangum.
Yeah, yeah. I honestly thought, man, the way that Darius looks right now, maybe this is a day we finally see Mangum. He seems to be the more, you know, the more bullish of a back anyway. And the defensive line was, you know, back in the backfield most of the time. And I don't know. The only other thing that maybe I'd question play calling was I maybe would have liked to see a couple more screens. I didn't think maybe they tried to go at the screen enough, but then again, when they did, it wasn't very successful. So all in all, you got to tip your hat to Rutgers. They did a good job. We can obviously cite the flaws that Minnesota had on the day, but a lot of that was induced by Rutgers, and they deserve that credit, Ryan.
Yeah, and I think they deserve credit for they get an extra bye week, or they get their bye week to prepare. They get a little bit healthier. I also think they played like a team that was backed into a corner, where
for sure.
They had lost four straight, and I don't think they thought that they were a 4-4 team. I know that Rutgers' preseason win total was somewhere around 7, 7.5. They hadn't been playing well. They'd been very banged up. They're without Menungai. Not anybody has a lot of expectations for them. Now, I would continue to say Rutgers was only a 6-point home favorite. But as we've seen with so many of these Big Ten teams, you can take Big Ten team number 5 through Big Ten team number 13. They're all about the same on any given day, depending upon who plays well, who doesn't play well. And that's where I would say Minnesota probably has better personnel than Rutgers has, but Minnesota had a bad day and Rutgers didn't. I think USC's got better personnel than Minnesota, but Minnesota had a better day and they beat USC because of it. But I think you also have to look at that fourth quarter and why Minnesota's on that winning streak that we had seen. You have the Max Brosmer game-winning drive against USC, UCLA, Illinois. Well, the offensive line played well, I think, in those fourth quarters. Well, let me read what happened in the fourth quarter in this one offensively, Luke, before the garbage time drive at the end of the game. You
sure.
Ready for this?
Yeah.
10 plays, 4 drives, negative 10 yards, and 2 Rutgers points and a turnover. I mean, you can't play much worse than those 4 drives. And I think a lot of it had to do with the protection up front, where I remember with about 9 minutes left before that first drive where Jamison Gears ends up fumbling, it's a TV timeout, and I watch PJ Fleck go over to the offense and I would say give them some very strong words of encouragement to let's get this thing going, because Minnesota had punted 3 straight drives. What happens on the first play? Holding on the right tackle. You're backed up. Second play, you fumble it, which, again, 1 percentile outcome there. Next drive, I mean, Max Brosmer is enveloped on the opening. That's my one of my favorite plays to watch back, how he catches the shotgun snap and he gets obliterated, fumbles the football, and ends up getting it back. 2 plays later, it's a safety. I mean, the protection in that fourth quarter, I will say this, and I don't mean for this to be incredibly pointed, but I want to get the point across here. That might be the worst quarter from the offensive line in the Fleck era. And I don't know why. I don't know how. I don't know. I wish I could give a solution, because I know everybody's looking for a solution, myself included. But when your offensive line just doesn't play well, and then you have a pass catcher fumble and Minnesota's offense commits their first turnover in over 4 games, I believe. It's just the way it's going to go in the fourth quarter. So that's why you're not able to put away a game in which you start the fourth quarter with a 2-point lead. Is no protection. Brosmer's got nowhere to go. There wasn't a lot of help on the outside too from the pass catchers in those situations, or as I'm sure Derek would love to talk about, what is pass interference in college football in 2024? But Luke, I don't mean to be that mean to that group, but I would struggle to find another quarter in which you could find in a tight spot game, Big Ten game, a very much a winnable game, 10 plays, negative 10 yards, and the other team actually gets points from it. It went about as pear-shaped as humanly possible.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to add, just maybe one more thing, is when you're struggling blocking in the front, you're going to have to, as a running back, you're going to have to take on unblocked defenders. And when the opposing defense is playing man coverage, you're generally not going to catch the ball in space. You're going to catch the ball in coverage. Minnesota's inability to break a tackle on Saturday, I think, was a huge factor. And I know we've talked about Darius, and he very obviously wasn't 100%.
I don't mean to overstep you here, but just to give people context for what Derek's about to go into, Minnesota ball carriers forced one missed tackle on the day. And Derek, on the flip side, Rutgers defense overall, according to Pro Football Focus, only missed one tackle all day. One.
Yeah, so I guess one another way to look at it is you think back to a healthy Mo Ibrahim, for example. You can think about several scenarios in which he was able to bail out a bad play, you know, a play that wasn't blocked cleanly. He would, you know, he would break two or three tackles on a carry. Don't get me wrong, Darius is absolutely capable of that as well. This isn't a knock on him, but he clearly wasn't healthy. The blocking wasn't clean. We aren't breaking tackles. Similarly, when you're catching in tight coverage, you're not breaking tackles there. So you're just there. They weren't getting any. It seemed like they lived in third and medium the whole day. They weren't getting first downs on first and second down. It was third and five to third and seven. It just felt like the entire day, because, you know, a 3 yard run never turned into an 8 yard run. Those small yards add up over the course of a game. And that's why you end up with even the sack adjusted running yards. I'm assuming were very poor, because as a per carry average, I'm sure it was very low. Cause we all saw it. A lot of tackles within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage, no broken tackles. That's why you end up in third and long.
I mean, Greg Harbaugh is not without blame for me. I just think that he's further down on the pecking order than some of the other issues. I think this game essentially signaled to me that Max Brosmer can fix a lot of things within this Gopher offense. But if he's got no time to be able to do it, and then on the flip side, Rutgers defensive backs were very physical with Daniel Jackson. They were very physical with these pass catchers. And I don't know how many times I have to watch Daniel Jackson come back to the huddle with both shoulder pads out and no flag being thrown. But that's the way it kind of went, where I just don't think Minnesota played very well offensively. And that's okay. Like, they'd been playing really well, and they're due for an off game. They're liable to have an off game. They're all human beings, especially 18 to 23-year-old individuals. It's just they weren't able to make the play. We'd seen all throughout this four-game winning streak, especially in the fourth quarter. All right, here we go. They're gonna bow up front. They're going to be able to make the play, give Brosmer time, give his pass catchers time. They're going to be able to make the play. They just didn't make the play on Saturday, and that's why Rutgers is able to walk away with a win.
Yeah, just a couple other things maybe to note. The Gophers actually were pretty good in the middle eight, which started as I was watching this game. I was thinking, gosh, you know, they might be able to turn this thing around. And then Ryan, to your later point on the fourth quarter, you know, the wheels just came off. They weren't able to carry that momentum. If you look at the middle eight, at least from an advanced stats metric, the Gophers ran 14 plays to Rutgers 4, and the Gophers had a EPA of 1.71 compared to Rutgers minus 5.14. It's, you know, situational football, but, you know, they did better. And then the other thing is that the Gophers really... I know that we can debate on how we're going to track explosive plays, but for the Gopher offense, if you go by the EPA metric, the Gophers only had two explosive plays, and they were both running plays. They didn't have any explosive plays in the passing game if you go by EPA. And just for clarification for those listening, EPA is expected points added. And when passing, it's when EPA on a play is greater than 2.4 yards. And when rushing, it's greater than 1.8 EPA. So in general, the Gophers just they struggled on offense. There were plays there. You think about the one that was barely overthrown to Daniel Jackson. You know, there are other plays that were out there as well.
You had Lemecki Rocket Ship have one dropped right into him.
But, yeah.
You know, he doesn't. I don't think he played the ball incredibly well. And the
one off of Jamison's there.
Yeah,
the Jamison's fingertips.
Yeah, that's
you have the Elijah Spencer cross country route that Brosmer just misses. You have
behind him
the Daniel Jackson fade ball in the fourth quarter, in which the defensive back doesn't turn his head at all. But there's no flag thrown. Which I do want to. We never really talk officiating on this podcast because, and even in this game. Like, I don't think it was the determining factor. I want to make that very explicitly clear for everyone because I know the messages are coming. But, Derek, I don't know what a pass interference is for Minnesota's receivers versus what it was for Rutgers receivers.
For what it is around the country, man. Like, what it is around the country.
Derek, I know that you have some pointed thoughts and observations. So let me clear my throat and let me give you the soapbox, my friend.
Well, thank you for teeing that up. I needed to get this off my chest. I think I probably share some frustration with some of the listeners here. College football has a pass interference problem. I don't know why it's become so severe this year. And I speculated with Luke in the offseason, the officiating staff's crew, they meet with administrators and coaches and they go over rule changes and they go over points of emphasis. Obviously, there wasn't a rule change that I'm aware of. Maybe there was a point of emphasis change. We're not privy to that. No coach has talked about that, so I don't think that's what's going on. But what I'm seeing that's become incredibly difficult is the consistency of pass interference is just out the window. In the NFL, and far be it from me to compliment the NFL on anything, but in the NFL, past 5 yards, if you touch the receiver, it's a penalty. The NFL's made this very clear. They like it that way because that means there's going to be more offense. They want more offense. They want more scoring. It's better for TV ratings. But in college football, it's very, very gray, even past 5 yards. And I just don't know. One play... if you grab an arm, if you tug on a jersey, if you come over the back, it's pass interference. And you think, okay, well, maybe that was a little bit close, but I can see it. You know, it's interference. That's by the letter of the law, it's interference. And then the next play, the next drive, the next game, whatever, guys are just absolutely mugged. They're pulled to the ground. They're grabbed. They're grabbed around the waist. There are people coming over the back, and there's no call. And I just don't know. That's really hard to develop game plans, to develop play calling for that, to adjust during the game for the coaches, for the players. And I don't bring this up because, as Ryan pointed out, this is very long down the list of reasons that the Gophers didn't win on Saturday. So I don't want this to be viewed through the lens of affecting the outcome Saturday. But I will say, if I'm being a little homerish here, if teams are going to respond and play Minnesota by playing man pressures, because that's the best way they feel they can stop Max Brosmer in this passing game, if that's going to happen, and if the officials are not going to call handsy defensive backs and grabby defensive backs, it's going to be very, very hard to be successful on offense. Now, the coaches won't tell you that, because they don't want to get fined and they don't want to be seen as complainers. But that's just a fact. And that's not a Minnesota thing. That's any passing offense. And Luke and Ryan know, I've talked about this even in games the Gophers aren't playing in, that if you look at a team that's playing a lot of man press coverage, you can tell within the first quarter if the officials aren't going to be calling, you know, hand checking, for lack of a better term. You just know it's good. They have a major advantage, and it's going to be really hard for opposing offenses to be successful throwing the ball. So, yeah.
Let me read a tweet that Joe Klatt put out back in October. This is October 13th. I think I've read this on this episode before, and I could not agree more wholeheartedly as a college football fan. He said, generally speaking, the officiating in college football is really bad. Very little consistency across the board. And this is the part that I'm not sure I necessarily agree with. I agree with the first part, but he says having a national officiating body rather than each conference having their own would be a good start to fixing the problem. I think we all have to recognize that there is inconsistencies. You know, these aren't, this isn't P people's full-time job. But interference in particular has definitely been a problem this year. And it's not just in the Big Ten. It's across the entire country. And the consistency from game to game really kind of dilutes the product to a certain extent, because, you know, you watch the one explosive play where Justin Wally literally gets pushed to the side as they're running, as the ball's in the air, is not called offensive pass interference. I can think back to an offensive pass interference that should have been called on Ohio State earlier this season. There are numerous instances of pass interference that could have been called or shouldn't have been called, but the consistency from what it's called is frustrating. And I would maybe argue that you maybe should adopt the NFL model, because I think, one, it's easier to call. It takes a little bit of the subjectivity out of it, but I can also understand that some people are going to be screaming at their earbuds at the moment because of me saying that. Generally speaking, though, I agree there's a problem. I don't know the solution. I don't know that Joe Klatt has the solution with a national officiating body, but there is a very much a pass interference problem in college football.
Well, I think they can get there. I think the best comp for this is the way that holding is called, because the adage is always, well, you can call holding on any play. Yes, that's true technically, but there's a pretty well-defined list of, and this is through the course of experience, the officials go back after the games and they review the plays that they review every call. And then they certainly review plays where it wasn't a call, or if a university sends in a grievance, they look at that, they get a response, et cetera. So through this review process, I think they can define and hone in on what is and isn't called, just the way they do with holding. You know, in general, holding is if it's outside of the defender's body, if it's at the point of attack, there's certain things they look for and they call, and it's pretty well defined. Yes, technically you could call it in every play, but there are times you just know what you, for the most part, you generally know what you can and can't get away with. We aren't there with pass interference. There's just, again, I don't know how any coach or player could understand that I can grab in this way, but not in this way. It's all over the board right now. And maybe that, as you mentioned, Luke, maybe a centralized body would help with that. But I think with or without that, I think they can get there by developing consistency through educating the officials on this is what we're going to call for pass interference and this is what we're not going to call.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to monitor. Again, this is not at the bottom of the list of the reason the Gophers lost, but it definitely impacts the game. But I think more than anything, it impacts the product of college football and the frustration that you can get when there is lack of consistency. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Any other offensive thoughts before we move on to defense? Because they're not innocent of some criticism as well.
I would tell you the Zoomers would say, if we have any Zoomer listeners, they're going to cringe at me. But you guys ate, left no crumbs. I learned that one over the weekend. So the millennial in me is a little confused as to kind of what that means, but I think I used it correctly. If I am going to end positively, I would say this. I think Elijah Spencer continues to play really well. This is the best stretch he's had as a Gopher. He made a couple of what I would call grown man catches across the middle. He's had 5 and I think 6 and 6 receptions over the last 3 games. And between the bye week, they're going to continue to need him down the stretch. And then again, I don't think Brosmer's infallible with, you know, he deserves some of the heat, I would say, for this. He missed a couple of throws, certainly. But I'd also say he's now broken the PJ Fleck era single season passing record in terms of pass attempts. You know, some of us try to say that coming into the year that Brosmer was going to break that. Now, he broke it in a way that I didn't think was going to be the issue, which was the running game. But now he breaks Tanner Morgan's 2022 pass attempt record in the Fleck era. So just wanted to note those couple of things. And even with all that, they still scored, I don't know, 19 points. It should have been more. I agree. Especially with the opportunities they had, but they'll get Tyler Cooper back, hopefully, for Penn State. He missed his second consecutive game. Sounds like there was the concussion protocol is not linear, contrary to what maybe Brett Bielema has his players go through. But he was able to travel to Piscataway, which is a very good sign for his continued progress in the concussion protocol. I would imagine that when and if he is cleared during the bye week, he's going to resume starting at left guard, because I do believe they're going to stick with Philip Daniels at right tackle in these next two games. I'd also say, with the way that this offensive line has been playing, they're going to come out gangbusters against Penn State, because that's kind of been the MO. They play ranked opponents, and the offensive line continues to rise to the challenge. So, again, I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I know that I continue to get called, I'm one of the most negative people in the media, which I think is hilarious to me. But there's, you just have to talk about it truthfully, Luke. And it was up, it was down, but it just was more down than up, unfortunately, in New Jersey.
Hey, I'm just happy that they can throw the ball 45 times, you know, in a game, recognize some of their strengths, and, you know, we're not just running into a pile and getting more frustrated. But let's catch a quick break. We'll come back, talk some defense. We'll talk some more. Ryan, the Burns Insurance Agency is here again to support Gopher Gridiron Radio. I know it's getting colder out, Ryan. I'm starting to see some snow in the forecast. That can mean two things, right? Number one, it can mean you're going to get your snowmobiles out soon. Or number two, it can mean roads are going to get slick and there are going to be accidents. Let's make sure you have the best coverage possible for the best price possible.
Exactly. And that's what the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, wants to do. They believe in service, service, and service. They don't want to be the biggest insurance agency in the world. They know that's not possible. But they want to be the one that gives you the best possible coverage at the best possible price while putting your needs first. Now, they are not just licensed in the great state of Minnesota. It's both of the Dakotas, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you think you're paying too much for your home, your auto, whatever little toy that you do have, check them out at insurancebyburns.com or email him, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Ryan, Dinky Town Real Estate Group is here to support Gopher Gridiron Radio and, more importantly, Dinky Town athletes and the athletes that it serves. You know, the weather is getting colder, but that doesn't mean that it's not a good time to buy a house. It's oftentimes when you can get some of the best deals in the market. These are experienced real estate agents that are going to take a portion of their commission, and it's going to go directly to Dinky Town athletes to support their initiatives on NIL. So if you are looking to buy or sell your house, please reach out to this very veteran group of real estate agents that can help you get the best bang for your buck.
They continue to sell houses well above asking. Or if you're just trying to figure out, how do I get into the, I want to buy a home and I don't know anybody and I know it's complicated to get into. What I want you to do, go to teamdinkytown.com, all one word, or you can just give them a call. They'd love to talk to you at 612-250-8562.
All right, let's talk about when the Gophers were on defense. The Gophers gave up, 24 points on the day, 26 total on the scoreboard. Two of them really weren't on the defense themselves. You know, when you come into this game, you're kind of thinking to yourself, hey, there's not going to be, you know, they're not going to have running back number one, Menungai, right? They're going to play this Antoine Raymond. He's a freshman. They're going to preserve his red shirt. They're going to be able to preserve his red shirt. You know, we've seen Ethan before. Ethan, you know, Ethan kind of played the game that Ethan plays. Like, he was really good in the first half. As the game went on, he struggled a little more. He was able to benefit from some good field position a couple times towards the end of the half. He ended up 17 of 33 for 240 yards, three touchdowns and an interception. This was probably on the plus side for him, but his splits obviously went down as the game went on. You know, he wasn't really a factor in the run game, other than he was really good in the mesh point. But in the end, guys, the Gophers weren't able to make enough plays. They forced one interception again to continue that turnover streak. But yeah, just it wasn't good enough. They needed to be better, and it's not on the defense. This loss isn't on the defense. You'd like to think you can score more than 19 points, but it is frustrating. So, you know, what did we see from a Kirk Shiraka-led offense schematically, Ryan, that gave, or Derek, that gave the Gophers a little bit of fits, especially in the first half?
Well, I don't think that, to be honest, I don't think that Kirk or Rutgers did anything out of character. I think this was a complete swing and miss on the defensive game plan in the first half. We've talked about this a number of times leading up to this week, that the defensive style this year is predicated on disruption, chaos, minus yardage plays, a lot of movement on defense. And for whatever reason, they chose to do none of that in the first half. They played almost exclusively no pressures, base coverage, a lot of zone. And Rutgers sat back and ran RPO, and Ethan had a clean pocket and was able to pick his spots and looked really, really good. And I'm very perplexed as to why those were the choices. The only thing, if I'm really searching, and I don't think this is a good answer, but it's the only thing I can think of, is the read option game does a good job of finding holes if you're out of gap. It does a good job of finding the undefended gap. So I don't know if there was a concern from the defensive staff that running some of those, that movement, some of those blitzes, some of those pressures puts you in a lopsided, leaves you with undefended gaps, and you can quickly hit a read option for an explosive play or a touchdown. So I don't know if there was a fear of that, and the thought was, hey, we're gonna stay gap sound. We're going to defend every gap. We're just going to play head up. We're not going to run a lot of pressures and games and you know, blitzes and twists and things like that. I don't know what the reasoning was, and Ryan, maybe you can help me, but that was the story of the first half. And frankly, I thought the second half was a lot better. They brought a lot of pressure, and we saw what we thought we were going to see. They really struggled to move the ball. They couldn't pass the ball. We got some pressure. We got some disruption, but it was too little too late, unfortunately, because the first half was – I'm at a loss.
Corey Heatherman has called a lot of really good games for Minnesota this year. I want to make that very clear. But I fall in line with Derek in terms of what was the game plan in the first half, where you know as much about Ethan Kaliak-Manis as anyone in the Big Ten. You know his strengths, you know his weaknesses better than anyone. And if I can tell you what his drastic splits are, in terms of first half versus second half, in terms of kept clean versus under pressure, well, it was about as easy as it could have been for Ethan, because he was kept clean in the first half. And what does he do? I mean, he absolutely lights them up for 70% completion percentage, 216 passing yards, and 2 touchdowns. And it turns out, guys, that when you do get pressure on him, when Cody Lindenberg triggers on a 3rd and goal, guess what he does? He makes a bad decision, and Ethan Robinson jumps it for an interception, or else it could have been even worse in that first half. I do not understand. I would call it as Wonder Bread, as vanilla, choose your bland adjective here, but I do not understand how Mr. Helter Skelter, Mr. Change the Picture pre-snap versus post-snap, just came out with that first half game plan. I do not understand it. Minnesota rushed 4 in the same 4 that were lined up there in a lot of cases. And let me tell you, I am not a fan of that first half pass rush. There was none. It was non-existent because Ethan had clean pocket after clean pocket after clean pocket. I mean, there's no tackles for loss and there's no sacks in the first half. And I'll be the first one to tell you, those two specific for the defensive line stats are not always a great indication. I would tell you that absolutely matched my eye test, but the pass rush was abysmal in the first half. And I just do not understand why that was the game plan coming out. You knew Kirk Ciarrocca, who I have the utmost respect for, was going to have something cooked up. We talked about it on the preview episode, Luke, that the man got an extra week to scheme for this. Contrary to what both staff say publicly, I can tell you what was said privately, and this one meant more. So they wanted to beat each other. They wanted to prove something to one another, and Ethan made the throws. Now, it also helps that on a 65-yard completion from his own end zone, I tweeted out the gif that Justin Wally gets shoved to the side, and that's an interesting interpretation of not pass interference for the offense, but I do not understand the first half offensive game plan, because then they came out with kind of the vigor, and I think they definitely got laid into it halftime, and guys like Anthony Smith certainly had an impact on that game. Devin Eastern, Cody Lindenberg continues to play really well, and that's why they hold Ethan Kaliak-Manis to 3 of 13 with 24 passing yards. Now, there were some really untimely drops that were good balls, but you dug yourself too much of a hole in the first half. And then in the second half, they did play better, Luke. But my goodness, for a team that leads the Big Ten in turnovers coming in, they just could not – they couldn't do anything with the ones that were given to them. And what I mean by that is I think that it's about 4 minutes left in the third quarter. Ethan airmails one high, hits Ethan Robinson directly in the chest, deflects up into the air. If he's able to catch it on the initial one, which his eyes aren't on the quarterback, and that's fine. He's not, I believe, in that certain defensive scheme they weren't supposed to be. But if he's able to react and corral that in, it's a 65-yard pick six.
Yep.
Minnesota goes up two scores. The game completely flips on his head. Or even the next play, Luke, Anthony Smith tosses the left tackle's hand, beats him inside, hits Ethan, fumble. Minnesota has it hit Devin Eastern in the knee. They can't come up with the football. Minnesota did not have a single drive offensively start in Rutgers territory on the day. Rutgers has two in the fourth quarter start within Minnesota's territory. They get points on both. I think that's an under-talked about part of that game. But, Luke, it's been a very opportunistic defense. It has. And that's where in the first half, I'm with Derek on the game plan. Don't exactly know why it was that. I would also say the pass rush was just non-existent, which allowed Ethan to make throws. And we know Ethan has the arm talent. Arm talent has never been an issue from Ethan freaking Calais-McManus. But it's trying to get him to think on the run. And that's where he gets in trouble. And then in the second half, it's just when make the plays that they give to you, and Minnesota just didn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. You have to be able to make the plays that are there, and they didn't do it. At the end of the day, it was frustrating as we saw the base defense early. And, you know, the thing that's frustrating, Ryan, at least from my standpoint, is there have been just a number of times, I don't know if a number is a fair word to say, but there have been times this year where you're like, hey, where was the defensive line in the first half? And then they show up later, right? And I don't know why that is, but in this one, it was frustrating because this wasn't a Rutgers offensive line that was really thought super highly of, right? And we know Ethan's what Ethan can be when pressured. And kudos to him. I mean, he made plays. He made some plays in the running game.
Luke and quarterbacks against Minnesota, whether it's a revenge game or whether they're wearing Hawkeye or Badger uniforms, having their best games of the season, but I think a lot of people are used to that at this point, right?
Yeah, and you know, you got to give him some credit too. He really held some meshes and got some yards for guys. I don't know. He had a good game, and this is one of the reasons the Gophers recruited him and had him for a couple of years. But at the end of the day, you got to tip your cap to a guy when he makes some plays. You know, and defensively too, we got to call out the fact that Aiden Goosby got injured. That was a real bummer to see for him. He's continued
hamstring injury, which I think they showed the replay. He's trying to cover a guy in the secondary and he just goes down and didn't look good. As someone who watched him not be able to put much weight on that, it wouldn't shock me if he's probably up for the rest of the regular season at this point, which is very unfortunate because I think he was playing the best football of his Minnesota career. And that's where Kerry Brown had to then immediately slide to strong safety, where I can assure you he hadn't practiced much throughout the week. Now, if Goosby is out, I wonder if we're going to see maybe a little bit more Coleman Bryson, or if they will just give that over to Kerry Brown, which allows everybody's favorite kid from Esco, Coy Parrish, to get onto the field. But that is a good thing to note as well, Luke.
Yeah. Additionally, you know, there were some bright spots. Anthony Smith definitely flashed at times. You definitely saw some plays there from Cody Lindenberg as well. But yeah, it wasn't a great day. The Ethan Robinson interception was great. I mean, able to keep his foot in bounds, and then he has the one doink off of him that he wasn't able to catch, which to your point, Ryan, he would have absolutely kept running. Derek,
the other play I want to note as well, because I think it's not going to show up like EPA or win probability added wise, even though I think it should be. There's 12 minutes left in the game, boys. It's 3rd and 16 at the Rutgers 7. And Ethan gets flushed to his left. Cody Lindenberg tips it, falls incomplete. Ja Joyner gets hands to the face and gives them an automatic first down and bails them out of their own end zone. Now, let me remind you of how atrocious Rutgers punter was. He would have been punting from his own end line in Minnesota, I'll remind you, had not started to drive beyond their own 35 on the day. If I'm led to believe that that punt gets off, Coy Parrish probably fields it at the Rutgers 45, maybe the 50. In Minnesota, up two has their best field position of the day. If they can just go 15 yards, Kessage can put them up to force Ethan to play for a touchdown, in which a second half, in which he was 3 of 13 for 24 yards at that point, or ended up being. But that penalty right there flipped the field position, where Minnesota does eventually get a punt, but instead of their offense taking over at their at the Rutgers 40 or the Rutgers,
it cost him 40 yards of field position.
Yeah,
is what it ended up being.
Actually, ironic.
Think about what ends up happening, which is a Jameson Gears fumble. Well, if Jameson Gears fumbles at the Rutgers 35, it's not as big of a deal in comparison to the Minnesota 15. So that is one play, too, that I would point to that it didn't need to happen. I appreciate Joyner playing really hard there, but a senior has got to play with some better thought process and technique there, because that one was just an absolute killer. And if it doesn't occur, I think the game may change, but because of it, the results are the results.
The irony, Ryan, if your comment there, is this was highlighted as a play on Game on Paper.
Oh, and it was.
Yeah, it was in the most important plays section. The EPA was 2.92, and it swung the winning percentage against 10%. So,
yeah, it feels like it should have been more, but I just again, first half I will put more on coaching. I think second half, I think the coaching adjusted. And then it's just guys got to make some plays. Now, they did force quite a few punts. And I'm not here to tell you that the defense is the reason they lost the game. It's on the offense, defense, special teams. And we'll certainly get into some PJ Fleck different things as well. It's just, why does this continue to happen? To Luke, your point, with the defensive line where they're slow to come, you know, slow to show up. And I'd also argue, why does the defensive line only play about seven guys? I that is one thing I cannot fathom, because they have about 20 guys on scholarship. They travel a lot of guys, yet in this game, Jalen Logan Redding played 70 snaps. Jeez. That's insane. It's like, okay, then what value do some of these older defensive tackles you have, or some of the younger defensive tackles, if you're not willing to play them? Play more guys. There's no reason at all for Jalen Logan Redding to play 70 of the 74 snaps defensively. You need to either, if you don't trust them with a younger guy like, say, Theo Randall, well, clearly you don't trust them with Darnell Jeffries or Logan Richter or Luther McCoy. So then what's the point of traveling all these guys other than an emergency break class situation? Like, play more guys in these final two games, please. Because I can assure you, playing Danny Strigow and Ja Joyner and Jalen Logan Redding and Devin Easter in 50-plus snaps a game, I don't think it's helping the defensive line be able to generate more rush. I think they need to be fresher, and I'd love to see that off the bye week.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Let's talk real quickly on special teams. As much as we love Coy Parrish returning punts, guys, I got problems in the kick return game.
Have they ever not had problems?
Yeah, well, the one where he returns at 13 yards, that was not great.
It just compounded in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, too, that the true freshman long snapper, Alan Sukup, doesn't have a great snap, and then Mark Crawford can't get the hold, and the laces are directly facing into the left foot of Dragon Kessich, and he smokes the right upright. You've also got the lack of awareness by your gunner for the second consecutive year, dude, loses track of kind of where he is.
Yeah.
I think gets a little bit greedy.
Maybe. I'm not sure I agree with you on that. I think he struggled to play that one. The one last year was really bad.
That one was just, they had no idea where they were on the field. And that was a different guy this year, different guy, but he got greedy with trying to down it at the literal 1-inch line, because he's waiting on the football. And I'll remind people, he can put his feet in the end zone in college. It's where the ball crosses the plane, and the ball completely crosses the plane. Just catch it at the two.
The irony was the official was right there, and they still needed replay to overturn that.
I know. But the other thing I would also mention is this is the biggest difference between P.J. Fleck and Greg Schiano was special teams. I mean, Rutgers nearly blocked Minnesota's punt almost a handful of times, and Minnesota was very lucky to have Mark Crawford get some very strong bounces. But one of the questions I got most during the game or Gopher Illustrated or wherever was, I believe it was in the fourth quarter. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. Minnesota punts from deep in their own end. It's a bad punt. It's 38 yards, and Rutgers is offsides, and P.J. Fleck declines the penalty. And everybody's like, well, why didn't he re-kick it? It was a bad punt. You want to know why, folks? Now, Fleck, we did not ask P.J. this after the game, but you know what my assumption of rational coaching here is? He was petrified to re-kick it because he thought it was going to get blocked, which how can you not adjust to their punt block scheme? It's the second half by this point. If you can't make in-game adjustments to punt block, then what good is Bob Ligaszewski in his 30-plus years of special teams? Like, if you can't adjust in-game there, like, what are we even discussing at that point? But that is truly why I believe that PJ didn't re-kick that, because he was petrified to get it blocked. And, Luke, I know that you're going to roll over in your grave here with this next 10-second statement, so I want to brace you for impact. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I probably owe Rob Wenger an apology at some point.
I know you do.
I know he'll never listen to it, and neither will certain other people very close to him, because they have some strong thoughts and feelings there, which, whatever. But I may have put too much of it on Rob Wenger at this point, because, Luke, you work in data. We have two different data sets, and a lot of the same issues persist, which tells me what? It's probably not all on the special teams coordinator. I think a lot of this is starting to have me put the proverbial finger pointing at the head football coach, because if there's one ask for me in this offseason from him, he has to completely revamp some of these block and return schemes, because they are just clearly not being executed. Derek, do you have any thoughts on special teams?
I have a question. Do you, just an open question here, do you feel that the head coach is dictating or has a say in which guys are playing in which positions on special teams?
I would argue yes, because you look at like Redding, right? And, you know, it took an injury to get him to lose his job, when clearly Coy Parrish had to have been the better option there, you know, punt returning and whatnot. But yeah, some part of me feels like yes.
Well, I guess the point I'm making is there are only so many schemes you can have on special teams, and I don't think it's rocket science, and I don't think there's many secrets. So if you can, and bringing in a new coach or bringing in a new scheme is relatively straightforward, I would guess they've probably tried to do that. So if we make the assumption that maybe that's not the only issue or the chief issue, then maybe it's about, because who's playing on which special teams and in what position has a big impact on the execution. I remember a couple examples. If you guys remember Carter Coughlin and Thomas Barber and these guys that have done really, really well on special teams, they made a big impact. I mean, the special teams that they played on were made much better because of the way they played on them. So I don't know what it's not a complete thought here. I'm just talking out loud, but if there maybe are guys that they're not playing that maybe they could be, that would give them an extra jump. I mean, Coy is a good example of punt return has looked better because you have a dangerous returner now, but maybe some of those guys that are in blocking and gunners and coverage and whatever, maybe they need to take a look at who they're playing there in order to make some improvements in addition to looking at scheme.
You remember that?
I am open to any and all thought processes, ideas on how to improve special teams, because I just, at this point in year eight, it continues to be different things each week, but the overall themes remain the same. I do want to say Kesich deserves a lot of credit, because he's now 8 of 8 since the bye week on field goal attempts. Considering the way the beginning of the season and even the middle of the season went for him, I think he deserves a lot of credit for actually getting a mental reset in. Like I said, he's now made 8 consecutive, or since the bye week, he's made all 8 of his field goal attempts. And for such a mental position, I think he deserves a lot of credit for being able to come back from all the struggles that he went through to be able to hit some big spot kicks, hits another 50 yarder in this one, excuse me. So there's my lone bright spot, Luke, because I'm Mr. Positive. Remember that.
Well, I wanted to add one positive thing too that I don't think materialized on Saturday, but I do notice that, or I have noticed that they're running more punt return with Coy back there. So generally on punt return, you're either running punt block, punt safe, or punt return. Minnesota used to be a punt safe all game, every game. Yeah. They never ran a return. They never ran a block. They're running more punt return now, not every punt, but they're trying to set Coy up on returns, which I think is good. And I also noticed in this game on kick return, now don't laugh, it didn't materialize. They actually did get some blocking on the first line, where we've called that out before, that the line ahead of the returner, in this case Coy, they weren't blocking anybody. And we talked about that and just said, the first guy is running down, they're just running down unblocked. They're not getting, you could have the best returner of all time back there. It's not going to make a difference. They are getting some blocks on that first line. Now, one of them, Coy, falls down. It didn't materialize, and I'm not predicting that it's going to flip overnight, but I am seeing some signs that I think there's an emphasis to try and get explosives for Coy, to make an impact with Coy. Now, they obviously have to do it, but at least we've taken the first step, and now we're not waving the white flag on every single punt return and every single kick return.
Yeah. Just to your earlier comment, just on personnel, I remember when red shirts, you got to play 4 games, thinking like, oh, great, now you can have some guys that you do want to preserve a red shirt on, but you can get them to play special teams a few games, and thinking like that'll help the PJ Fleck special teams. That has not materialized in any way, shape, or form yet. That was an idiot thought of mine. But yeah, I wonder your personnel piece, because there has been in years past when younger guys have contributed. Ryan, are they playing more older guys on special teams? I don't even notice.
I don't think it's exponentially different than what has been the last couple of seasons. I would tell you on coverage units specifically, it's almost all defensive players, and it has been for all 8 years.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at like kick return, you have your tight ends and whatnot, especially on that second line, but it's primarily defensive players, especially on say coverage units.
Sure. Okay. Let's talk real quickly. Just a couple observations. I wrote down a couple of notes that I want to talk through. And I think I've said this on the podcast before. I know I've talked in private to a number of people about this. I think if PJ Fleck has a problem as a coach, I think one of the problems that he has is being a significant favorite in games. In not necessarily the Nevada Rhode Island one, but this is the highest point favorite that Minnesota was this season. They were 6.5 point favorite is what I have logged in my notes here. And for some reason, PJ plays those games different, it seems. And not saying that this was the total outcome, but it's something that has always kind of bugged me. And I don't know if it's his fingerprints on the defensive risk averseness. Playing more base here is part of why we saw them play more base. But man, there's something about him when the Gophers are a 6.5 to 10 point favorite in a Big Ten game that he just, it bugs me. Is this anything else you guys have noticed, or am I the only one on this?
Well, a point I would want to make off of that, Luke, is I think this team and many of the teams in the last few years, I think what you're saying is when they take the approach of risk aversion, it just never really seems to go well, to be honest. And what I've seen this year, I know I mentioned this to you guys, so I wanted to get this point in. Just kind of a theory, a thought, whatnot. Every team, the team identity is different every year for every team. And in football, I feel like some teams have a lot of success playing a very calculated and methodical approach, very surgical approach. They're very steadfast. They're not up and down. And some teams really thrive in that. Other teams, they really thrive off of a high energy, upbeat, urgency approach. This year, more than any other year, I believe, in the PJ Fleck area, this team absolutely plays better, both offensively and defensively, when they play with urgency. They play better on offense when they're playing with tempo, and they play way better on defense when they're just flying around full speed. They're blitzing, they're moving, they're, as Ryan pointed out, pre and post snap, they're disguising things. When this and the games we've talked about earlier in the year where they had one really good half and one really bad half, that's what I saw. I saw one half where they're playing more calculated, more base, more wait and see, more, and that just has not worked for this team at all. So it's, you know, not a fully articulated point, but I think that plays off of what you're saying, Luke, which is maybe that was part of the approach in this game is we're going to play a little bit more calculated and a little bit more risk averse. And that doesn't work with this team.
Yeah. And it was noticeable from the very beginning on defense in particular. You know, they weren't playing with any DGAF, right? They're just literally sitting there, literally sitting, waiting, reacting, playing base. And it was like, this is not the defense we've seen. It just felt like PJ maybe had his fingers on this. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe I'm building a conspiracy theory here, but I digress.
I think you're right. I would also say, I don't disagree with what you guys say, but I think for this specific team too, I feel like when the lines are playing well, they're the catalyst for everything. Like the offensive line can, if they can protect Brosmer and open a hole for Darius Taylor, this thing's going to go well. And specifically, or flip side of things, defensively, when the defensive line comes to play, then your secondary gets a lot of opportunities to make plays. But in a game like this one, that what's the opposite of a catalyst? They're an inhibitor. And then they get in the way in these, some of these bigger moments. And that's why for this specific team, I also think they just go as the lines go, which is obviously true for so many of these college football teams. But I feel like it's kind of put in maybe a bigger spotlight this year in my mind compared to other years.
I think that's a great point, Ryan. I would say too, on the offensive line portion of that, it seems like this year, if the team, there's a threat, there's a cliff. If the offensive line plays well enough, they can do all the things that they want to do. It's not that the offensive line needs to be dominant. They're not, frankly, they haven't relied on the offensive line to, in the ways they have in the past when they were running the ball at the same clip as the service academies. That really dictated everything. It's like, this year they need to be playing well enough so that they can do everything passing the ball. They can run all the plays they want to run. If it's not good enough, everything else tumbles down. And that's, I think that's a great point.
Yeah. I also want to give congratulations to one of the oldest football programs in the history of college football, Rutgers. Finally beat the University of Minnesota. First time in their history. It took until 2024 to finally beat the University of Minnesota in a collegiate football game. Congratulations to you, Rutgers, in that. And then the other thing I wanted to note is, we kind of alluded to this earlier, but I'm telling you guys, this is just parity in college football. And what I mean by that, I don't mean that all the games are going to be really close. It's just that anybody can beat almost anybody on any given week, maybe with the exception of the top couple teams. But man, if you look at those Big Ten standings right now, outside of Indiana, maybe Penn State, maybe Ohio State and Oregon, I feel like almost anybody can beat each other with the exception of maybe Maryland and Purdue. That whole middle section, it's just like, anyone can win that game. It just doesn't cease to amaze me. And I personally like it. I think for some people it's going to be an acclimation period, but I think this is the parity that we see in the NIL transfer portal era.
Yeah, I would say I it's here to stay. I mean, that's now the rules can change and they have changed a lot in the last 5 years of college football, but I'm with you, Luke. I won't belabor the point because I've done that in previous podcasts, but I think for just take the Big Ten for this year with new teams included, take out the top two teams and the bottom two teams. I think you're absolutely right that all those teams in between, it's a week-to-week proposition. And I just think this is the way it's going to be. And this is an adjustment as a fan base, because college football, way more than the NFL, is so much based on, should we win this game? Should we lose this game? Are we supposed to win this game? Are we supposed? I think a lot of that's just going away.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're playing Ohio State or Oregon this year, or unless you're playing Purdue, as you pointed out, other than that, I don't really think it matters. You're playing UCLA, USC, Rutgers, cool. Illinois. I mean, it's week to week.
Yeah. You got any thoughts there, Ryan?
I would tell you my column is going to be titled, Did Minnesota Jumpstart UCLA? Considering your UCLA Bruins have now run off three straight. But you also mentioned, Luke, I mean, there isn't really much separating any of these 5 through 16. And it's almost like they're all within 2 wins of each other. There are, I believe, somewhere between, I think there's 8 teams in the Big Ten with 5 or 6 overall wins. Minnesota's included in that. Now, Minnesota's currently tied for 5th in the conference right now with 4 conference wins. There's a boatload of them at 3. There's some of them in a 2. But this is what everybody wanted. This is what the portal is doing, where all of the teams at the top can't hoard all the talent anymore, or the kids at the FCS level like Max Brosmer, Ethan Robinson want a shot. They can come up. But I also just want to discuss, too, the context within the bye weeks here, Luke. We talked about last bye week, if Minnesota can go 2-1 in this stretch,
oh yeah,
that's a great outcome for them.
And this is let's make sure we say this. They went 2-1, and I can understand that you're maybe frustrated because Rutgers probably looked like the most winnable of those three games. But like, this is still a good outcome going 2-1 in that 3-game stretch.
Exactly. And that's where, yeah, it sucks. It's the last one, so it leaves a sour taste in your mouth going into the bye week, and then you stew on that a little bit. Maybe you didn't get your deer on opener, and then you watched your Gophers lose, and now you're all in a tizzy. And I get it. Trust me, I get it. But in the scope of even this Minnesota season, I will remind everyone again, preseason expectations for this team were very low. They were picked in the bottom third of the Big Ten.
5.5 wins, right?
Poll. Or even in Vegas, their win total opened with Purdue as tied for the lowest in the Big Ten at 4.5 wins. Now, it ended at 5 or 5.5, but they're already at 6.
Yeah.
And I understand fan morale and the fan base. I mean, I remember Friday talking to some Gopher fans in Piscataway, and they're like, well, 9-3, you kidding me? And now they lose the game in which they're leading in the fourth quarter. They just don't play very well. It happens. I'm upset about it as anyone. You just listen to me complain about it for the last hour. But they're still 6-4.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen a Penn State ranked team in the top 10 come in here before. And it's going to be senior day. It's going to be an eventual sellout, in my opinion. I think this thing's going to be rocking. And I don't think Wisconsin is any different than what it has been. I mean, does it suck that if you would have won that game, you were looking fantastic for a Florida Bowl game?
Yeah.
Which, you know, a lot of people were looking forward to, myself included, considering the amount of times I've visited Detroit for Christmas. Now, it's still on the table. It's more complicated because now you certainly have to go 1-1, if not 2-0, to be able to do so. But, I mean, I would be surprised if Minnesota at this point, at this stage, isn't a slight favorite probably against Wisconsin. Again, I think they're going to have a punter's chance against Penn State, but in the context of what the expectations were for this season, if they end up winning 7, if they go 7-5, I'll remind you, that's 2 wins over what their preseason win total was supposed to be. It sucks that they lost those games to, say, North Carolina and Rutgers here. I'm not here to tell you it doesn't leave a bad taste in your mouth, but I would say on the flip side, I mean, that USC game could have gone very differently. Same thing with Illinois. Same thing with UCLA. So that's why I hate playing the woulda, shoulda, coulda game. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, the North Carolina one and, yeah, the Rutgers one, they're going to sting. But I'm sure USC and UCLA and Illinois fan bases are saying the same, because 3 Max Brosmer drives and then your defense gets turnovers. Like, it's very different. So it's okay to be upset. But I would also say 6-4 going into your second bye week, I think that's still a pretty good outcome for where things are, were supposed to be coming into the season, guys.
Yeah. Any other thoughts, Derek? And then maybe we can touch quickly on the Big Ten games.
One more comment on the parity thing. You know, I think the biggest pushback that I've seen or read regarding our, I guess now, soapbox about the new parity in college football is the biggest pushback is, well, look, it's the same teams at the top. It's the same teams are winning. And I would challenge that by saying, and I think this plays into the Penn State game here in 2 weeks, you can't tell me that, yes, those teams at the top are still mainly at the top, but they're not the same teams. Georgia's not the same Georgia. Ohio State's not the same Ohio State. Alabama's not the same Alabama. Miami's not the same Miami. If you've watched those games, or at least watched the highlights or followed them, even the teams at the top, their depth is gone. Mm-hmm. And they're not, they don't have the stacked talent. So where this plays into Penn State is Minnesota's not going to be favored against Penn State, but this is a more beatable good Penn State team than it would have been 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, what have you. It's less of a mountain to climb. They still have to climb it. Still a really good team. They're still, Penn State's still going to be favored, but it's a very winnable game, and Wisconsin is the most schizophrenic team in the Big Ten, so who knows?
One last point before we transition is, you want parity? Here's some stats. BYU, fifth ever 9-0 start for them. Indiana is now 10-0, their first 10-win season ever. Oregon is the third Big Ten team to win 10 games in their first season in the conference. You've got Colorado, who's 7-2. Look, I wasn't high on Dion last year. They went from being over talked about last year to now being undervalued and under talked about this year with what they're doing out there at Colorado. They're going to be challenging BYU for that Big 12. And then you got Army, who's 9-0. They're tied for their best start ever. They got 13 straight wins. And that's where the hope would be one of these years. I don't know when it's going to be. I hope it certainly comes like you all do. That if these teams can do it and have some of their best starts ever, why can't a team like Minnesota?
Yeah, for sure. Let's continue on that parity bandwagon here real quick. UCLA nips Iowa. Iowa is a 6.5-point favorite going into Pasadena, lost 20-17. I'm telling you guys, UCLA was, they were just better than they were given credit early in the season. They played a gauntlet of a schedule, and they're starting to rattle off a few wins, and good on them, and good on Deshaun Foster.
They're an interesting team, man. They're incredibly undisciplined with like penalties and just stupid things, but then they're also incredibly gifted. And obviously Ethan Garber's, we're going to be the fan club for him. Has a couple of stupid interceptions early in that game, but then he comes back. He's inflappable. But I think the story from this game, Luke, UCLA runs it for 211 yards against Iowa, Derek. Did you see that one coming?
No. Well, and then flip the other side. UCLA shut down the best running game in the Big Ten over the last 3-4 weeks. They just shut them down. Michigan State would be the other team that was able to shut down Iowa. But those two things I didn't see coming. I don't think anybody else saw coming.
Yeah, again, I think you can chalk this one up to parity. Okay, Maryland gets thumped by Oregon, 39-19. It was maybe a little closer, or it wasn't particularly close early. Maryland got a late 8 points in the fourth quarter, but Oregon rolls. Maryland, unfortunately, is on that bottom side of a team, right there with Purdue is one that's probably not really in the parity discussion. Currently 1-5 in the Big Ten, but Oregon rolls, guys, and they look like I just don't think anybody's going to beat them.
They certainly look like a team that is one of the upper echelon college football playoff contenders to go win it all. Now they're going to be, look at their final two games here. They have to travel to Madison this upcoming weekend before a bye week to prepare for Washington, which I know Luke's Huskies are going to be rearing for the opportunity.
Oh gosh. It's not but looking good.
This is certainly a team that when it's all said and done, they have to be one of the favorites, Derek, to go win a national championship.
Yeah, they're playing at a national championship level, and they've done it against teams like Ohio State. They've taken care of business against lesser teams, and they have been very methodical. And some Oregon teams in the past have been very DGAF. They've been all over the place. This is a very calculated, methodical team. They put a lot of games away in the first half, and they sit on the lead in the second half, and nobody's been able to. Be interesting to see who the Big Ten championship who they might face.
All right, Purdue was able to hold Ohio State to only 7 points in the first quarter, but ended up giving up 45 all game, and they didn't score any of themselves. Poor Ryan Walters and his team have really struggled this year, fellas. You know, it would have been nice to have them on the schedule in the old Big Ten West, but it wasn't meant to be in this new Big Ten. And in the end, Ohio State rolls. And they will, unless some slip up, I just don't see any reason they won't be in the college football playoff.
Now, they face Northwestern at a practice field along the lake next week, which I think will be an interesting type of vibe for like 10,000 fans that'll be able to watch it. But I have that one circled. The same weekend that Minnesota hosts Penn State, Ohio State gets a home game against Indiana. I think that one's going to be real fun to watch Ohio State's going to get tested here between Indiana and then the Michigan game. Rivalry games do a lot of things to a lot of people.
Yep.
Especially when Michigan actually shows up and they play Indiana hard.
Yeah, good. So, are you want to add anything to that, Derek?
Well, not that it's going to affect the outcome, but Ryan, is there a forecast for that game on the lake in November next weekend? Because that would be really interesting to me, because I think most of us have probably visited Chicago, and that can get really nasty in
November.
Apparently,
this game's going to be at Wrigley Field.
Okay. Darn. But it
looks like it's actually going to be a pretty dang nice day, unfortunately. It looks like it's going to be 58 degrees in the middle of November, which I think Buckeye fans and college football fans in general lucked out there.
All right, let's talk about Indiana there real quick. They were able to hold on. They went 20-15 over Michigan. A good test, and they were able to overcome it. Michigan is not the same Michigan team as last year, but they were able to put a lot of field goals on the board, but just couldn't get it done. But man, Indiana moves to 10-0, 7-0 in the Big Ten. Kudos to them. You know, they look like the part, and look like they have a chance to get to the college football playoff. My guess is they're going to have to beat Ohio State for that to happen, mostly because their name is Indiana. But yeah, they've been really fun to watch.
The biggest takeaway for me from this game is, did Michigan's defense put anything on film that Ohio State can use? Because up to this point, nobody had been able to touch Indiana's offense.
Right.
I mean, Indiana had just absolutely been unconscious, and they were mortal in this game. They had to fight. They had to grind out a win where really anything and everything had worked. And so there really wasn't any good film or anything that you could take from that to, you just had to try different things. So that's going to be interesting. Is I know that Indiana, I'm not taking anything away from them. They earned the win, but was there anything that Michigan showed that Ohio State in 2 weeks could use against Indiana?
I think the thing I took away from it is Michigan's physicality on their defensive line and in their front seven maybe gave Indiana some more problems. And that's where certainly Ohio State's front is as athletically gifted with bodies and length and speed and twitch as you will find across college football. So that's going to be certainly one thing to watch.
All right. Penn State rolls at home against Washington 35-6.
What's going on with your Huskies, man?
Jed Fisher's a choice.
Oh, you're going through it, man.
Yeah, It's not great.
How are you feeling about that game that they got coming up? Short week, UCLA.
I remember telling my family, hey guys, you know, I'm curious what your thoughts are coming into your first season in the Big Ten. It's a slog, right? And one of my cousins was like, oh, I think eight games for sure. I expect eight wins. I was like, buddy, eight's going to be a mountain of a task with your schedule. And here they are, 5-5, 3-4 in Big Ten. It's just tough. They'll bounce back, and they'll have some years, but they're going to be similar to Minnesota. They'll probably have a few more highs in Minnesota, but they'll have some highs and some absolute lows as well. This isn't an absolute low. This is in the middle, but Penn State's good. And this is their first trip, I think, to Happy Valley, and they got thumped pretty good.
They caught them on the, Yeah, caught him on the whiteout at Penn State, and that didn't help. And it, I would also say, Luke, I don't know if you'd agree. I've been intrigued to watch the new West Coast teams, and probably next to Wisconsin, I think Washington has been the most up and down team that I've seen.
No doubt.
There are weeks that they could play with anybody, and you know, this game, I'd say in the first half against Penn State, they battled, but it just quickly got away from them. And when they don't, there have been some weeks this year where they just don't, they don't have it. And so week to week, Washington's been a very interesting, I wouldn't want to, you know, wouldn't want to play him because you catch him on the wrong week, but a lot of disparity in their play this year, it seems like.
Well, and you think they should have beat Rutgers at Rutgers. They absolutely outgained them, you know, played better than them, couldn't find a win, you know. They're struggling. It's just fact of the matter.
I would also tell you next week in the Big Ten is going to be huge for some of these bowl seedings where you have UCLA, Washington. UCLA's at 4-5. Washington's at 5-5. You've got Michigan State going to Champaign. Illinois is only a 3-point favorite there. If you're hoping for a Citrus Bowl berth for your Golden Gophers yet, you need Illinois to falter down the stretch because Iowa cannot go to the Citrus Bowl. You've also got Nebraska at 5-4 traveling out to Memorial Coliseum to take on USC. And you've also got Rutgers, Maryland. So while your Golden Gophers may be off, there are going to be some very competitive games within the Big Ten coming up here.
There's some really interesting, you know, end of seasons to watch. You know, like you look at Washington, they have UCLA and Oregon left. There's no guarantee they become bowl eligible. Then you have UCLA, you know, UCLA is currently sitting at 4-5. I had their schedule up. What did I do? I'm an idiot.
Nebraska is on the cusp.
Yeah, exactly.
Nebraska's got to figure it out here. I mean, you've got, they're on the road at USC this weekend before hosting Wisconsin and then having to travel to Iowa on Black Friday. The Badgers are back on the docket and they have to face Oregon this weekend, travel to Nebraska before they face Minnesota. They've lost two in a row. There's so many of these teams that we continue to say everybody's essentially fighting for their bowl lives at this stage. And that's where if you can just eke out one or two more.
Yeah.
I don't know how these bowl reps are going to sort between.
Well, and UCLA's got three games left. They have Washington, USC, and Fresno State to win two games too. I did pull up their schedule eventually. Good. Oh, good for
me. Well, in the expanded college football playoff, also fact, I mean, you've had more teams in the Big Ten, but then that's also, you also have to consider more teams going to the college football playoffs from the Big Ten, which right. then bumps teams well, back up.
If all four projected teams get in, where Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State get in, that's where, again, they get taken out of the bowl game discussion for the rest of the teams, like going to the Citrus or the ReliaQuest or the Duke's Mayo, the Guaranteed Rate. Now, Dan Owen, the resident bowl game-ologist for your Golden Gopher team, and I will die on the hill of that man knows more about Gopher bowl games and prognostications than anybody I know. He'll be releasing his bowl game predictions with a couple weeks to go tomorrow, but it is incredibly murky for everybody involved right now because everybody's just about the same. There needs to be a little bit of separation in these coming weeks, and that's where next weekend's slate of games will start to do so.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. And like you said, Derek, there's a bunch of teams that are on the cusp of maybe being bowl eligible, and not everybody's going to make it. So it should be fun. I don't think I have anything else. You guys got any parting thoughts? Otherwise, we'll wrap this up.
I just think, the Rutgers game lost. That Rutgers loss sucks, especially because they played their worst football in the fourth quarter. But during that four-game winning streak, they had been playing their best stretch in the fourth quarter, so it just didn't bounce their way in this one. I know it sucks to go into the bye week with a loss, leaves a sour taste in your mouth, but there's still winnable football games for your Golden Gopher squad here in November.
Ryan, your best guess on game time for Penn State? I know it's too far out, but just a guess. Well,
likely by the time people listen to this, it's probably going to be announced on Monday.
Okay.
I would be surprised, I guess, if they put it into the 6-7 day flex, but seemingly every Minnesota game of late continues to have that happen. So I guess maybe I'm eating my own words. My guess would be an 11 a.m. game on Fox, the big noon game, but that is purely speculation. Again, by the time you listen to this, if you look at the clock and it is past noon on Monday, just go to my Twitter account. The Big Ten will have either told us what the game time is, or they'll say it's going to be in the 6-7 day flex. Then you'll have to wait till next weekend. But that's my guess.
All right. Well, we want to thank our sponsors for making this possible: Home Field Apparel, the Burns Insurance Agency, and Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group. Yeah, thanks all for listening, and we'll be back probably with a bye game episode. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Lowe's knows you don't want to sacrifice reliability for savings. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select LG appliances and purchase two or three select major appliances to get an additional 10% off. Save big on LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.